Tonight I thought that we, because we will close the book of Colossians this Wednesday, I thought we would revisit the text in chapter 3 about family. And what I did was present to you four of the common texts that talks about household in the New Testament. And these are, I know this topic is probably a little boring because it's about family, about household codes, but I see an importance here. So these texts are from the book of Ephesians, and Ephesians chapter 5, verses 21 to 6, chapter 6, verse 10, and the other text is in Titus chapter 2, verses 1 to 10, and then also 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 16 to chapter 3, verse 7. And, of course, the Colossians, the last part of Colossians that we talked about last Wednesday. So we will revisit Colossians through these other texts in the New Testament. It talks about household codes or a family, how a family is supposed to function according to Paul. In the New Testament times, or during the apostles' times, they had a distinct way of living as husbands and wives, as a family, as, you know, sons and daughters, and mothers and fathers, you know, and all of that. And it's very different from us today, because in the Western world, we're more independent than more of a community. Where I grew up in the Philippines, people tend to stay in one location most of the time. Not always true, but most of the time, it's generally that case. And also, when you turn 18, you don't kick away your son. They can still live with you. Even at some point when they get married and have their own kids, there's still the possibility that they will stay with you in the same house. So you have a moderate size of house, and you can find 30 people in the same house, because there's, you know, Filipino family with five kids, and two of those kids get married, and those kids have two of kids of their own. So you get 30 kids in one single house. So it's very community driven, but here in U.S. it's more of an independent kind of community. We want to be separated from our parents as much as possible. We want to drive our life based on what you want and based on my personal, you know, personal desire, and we want to, as much as possible, try to be very independent. In the New Testament time, they are very community-driven, just like the Middle Eastern communities. And their understanding is that there's supposed to be an integration of a family and between a parent and also the daughters and sons and daughters, the integration of their relationship, which means that if a son, even though he's married, a father can still have a say to the decisions of the son, or even to the grandkids. So this was their understanding. In Ephesians chapter 5, verses 21 to chapter 6, verse 10, it gives us a similar text from Colossians about the family, and we will go there and read those texts or those verses for a minute. Galatians, Ephesians, chapter 5, verses 21. I'm going to start from verse 20. Giving thanks always for all things to God the Father in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. 21. Verse 21 of chapter 5 of Ephesians. Submitting to one another in the fear of God. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is... Verse 21. 22, I'm sorry. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife. So also Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is the subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself as a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. So the husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Verse 32. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. Children, in chapter 6, verse 1, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother, which is the first commandment with the promise, that it may be well with you, and you may live long on the earth. And you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Bondservants, or slaves, in other translations, be obedient to those who you are masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling and sincerity of heart as to Christ, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as bondservants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with goodwill doing of Christ, with goodwill doing service, as to the Lord, not to men, knowing that whatever good anyone does, he will receive the same from the Lord, whether he is slave or free. And you, masters, we're about to end this text. Masters, do the same thing on them. Giving up, threatening, knowing that your own master is also in heaven, and there is no partiality with him. So you can see the difference if you still remember Colossians chapter 3, the last part of Colossians, that the book of Ephesians chapter 5 that talks about the household code as well is very similar to Colossians chapter 3, and it's the same author, and so there's obviously a similarity because it's written by the same author. But before Paul went on to designate the responsibilities and what a husband or a wife should do towards the what a wife should do towards the husband and what the husband should do towards the wife, he said something that's important to us in verse 21. And I think this is a thing that sometimes we probably forget, that before he said wives should submit to their husbands, and before he said husbands love your wives, he said submit to one another. So there's this emphasis here before he went on to describe these other responsibilities, that there should be submission between a husband and a wife, and a father and the son submits to the father, and the father kind of respects the son. So there's this dynamics that goes on here, the submission towards each other. And there are many forms of submission today. Some way of submitting to a wife, or a wife submitting to husband, is through obeying whatever the husband says. If the husband says something, then you kind of just nod your head. Which some find good, and some that are, I don't want to call them rebellious, but they are more free-spirited. They don't want to just nod to their wives. There's a growing number of resurgence of feminist, groups that not only want to have power in the workplace, but also want to have the same influence and also the same ability as the guys. And there's bad and good things to that. One of the good things, of course, is they get the same pay and the same salary. And the bad thing to that is that there are, obviously, the body is designed by God in a certain way where responsibilities physically belongs to a certain body. That means the bearing of a child is specifically for the women and not for the guys. And, lifting heavy objects and defending the family and the spouse belongs to the guy. And these are, in my belief, these are God-designed responsibilities that that belongs to each person in a specific way. And so I think what we need to think when we think about submission is that Paul is talking about an equal submission here, not a lordship kind of submission where one says something and the other person just nods. It's more of a respectful kind of submission, that you submit in a respectful way. And there's this proposition that explains this to us. It said, submit your husbands as you would submit to the Lord. Love your wives as you would love the church, as Jesus loved the church. And how did Jesus love the church? He loved the church through dying. So there's an implication that if I love my wife, then I will be willing to die for my wife, just as Jesus died for his church. We're going to go to the slaves and the masters. The slaves, like what we said last Wednesday, is very different. The kind of slavery that they had back in the day, back in their day, was different from the slaves here, where you know you have two separate quarters. But they did it differently, where they just stay in one room, one house. I'm sorry, one house. And when Paul wrote this, he was addressing not just the whole community of the Roman Empire, but he was addressing the Christians whose relationship has been turned upside down, because they now have a slave, a servant, that is also a Christian, and these slaves or these servants that are Christians are serving masters that are Christians. And so how do you reconcile a relationship that has been turned upside down? And so Paul said, the way that you treat each other is as if you are treating Christ. Treat them with respect. Obey your master as if you're obeying Christ, and treat your slaves as if you are treating Christ. Titus chapter 2, we're not going to read that text from Titus chapter 2. We're just going to go through this summary here. It said, older women to be reverent, to be respectful. Younger women to love their husbands and children. And young men to be self-controlled. And slaves to be to be humble to their masters. In this text from Titus chapter 2, what I want us to do is focus on this third one, on this phrase that said, young men to be self-controlled. And he probably is talking either to teenagers or young adults, guys, or guys that recently got married and doesn't have any kids yet, so they're considered young men. Self-control is something that we all need, of course, but even more for young men, because they have this rush in their body, this adrenaline, and sometimes they just do things without consideration. And so Paul told them to be what? To be self-controlled. And you become self-controlled when you have an understanding that every person in the family, whether that's a husband or that's a wife or that's a son or a daughter or that's your slave, is an image carrier of God. There was a preacher that used the mirror as an object lesson to this image, you know, image of the Imago Dei, or image of God. And he took this whole mirror and he smashed it with a hammer and said that the image of God is like this. And he said, it was like this. It was not broken. Then he smashed it and said, but now it's like this. It's broken. And you cannot easily distinguish yourself facing this broken mirror, because it's broken. And Paul's idea here is that when you have an understanding that every member of the family, whether it's a wife, a husband, or a child, or a daughter, or a son, or a slave, those persons are image carriers or bearers of God, then you have to respect them. You have to control yourself. You don't just open your mouth and cuss at them or curse at them, because doing so would be like cursing at God, cursing at the image of God. So Paul said, young men, I know you're too wild, you have lots of adrenaline in your body, but be self-controlled. First Peter chapter 2, verses 16 to chapter 3, verse 7. And again, these four texts here Ephesians and Titus and First Peter and also Colossians are four of the common texts about household codes, like how a Christian family should look like and act towards each other. So this is specifically for the Christian families. 1 Peter chapter 2, it said, live as free people, but don't use your freedom to hurt. Just because you're free doesn't mean you have the freedom as well to hurt the other member of the family. Show respect to everyone. Love the family of believers, meaning the Christians. Love the family of Christianity. Fear God, honor the emperor, which would probably equal to honor the president to this day. Slaves, submit to your masters. Wives, submit to your husbands. Husbands, be considerate to your wife and treat them with respect and love one another. Different order. This is Peter, one of the disciples of Jesus. Same, different, even though it's a different order, it's the same text that you see. Husbands, love your wives, and wives, submit or respect your husbands. And children, obey or honor your parents. And slaves, be subject, be humble towards your masters, and masters, respect your servants. So what does this whole thing tell us about the picture of a family in the New Testament times? This tells us that the way that Paul presented the picture of a family, he reverted it so that we have a better understanding of what a family should look like, not just during their time, but today. That culture should have no influence, even though this is the reality that culture has so much of influence into our family. But going back to the text, the point is that, at least from Paul's perspective, that culture should have no influence in any Christian's family. I'm going to draw a triangle here that has been used by many teachers. Usually the understanding, is that this is the wife right here. This is the... I'm just going to put down, not husband, wife, children, slaves, and the husband is on the top. Because from their perspective, the husband is the head of the household. And so whatever he says, just nod. It's easier that way. It's peaceful that way. There'll be no trouble and we can sleep better. We can wake up, So this was their understanding, but Paul reverted that by saying, actually, no. God gave us a better understanding of how a Christian family should look like. He said, husbands are here, wives are here, children are here, and slaves are here, and they all submit to, probably have, this is a, this is Christ. And this is wives, husbands, children, and slaves. That might have been the imagery that has been constantly used by teachers. But it's a reverted triangle where... The headship is no longer the husband, but Christ. And that goes back to Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21, where you submit to one another because all of us are, servants of Christ. And then I'm going to ask the question, just so we can process this as a 21st century Christian family. What does this mean to us today? What's the meaning of this? Because you have different kinds of sources, social media, Facebook, television, movies that say something about families. And what you have are families that are very different from this description in the New Testament by Paul and also by Peter. You have families that are led by women. Is there a problem there? And you have families that are led by the children just because the parent, either the mother or the father, can no longer physically be the father and the mother of the family. And you have families that are so diverse that you don't know which one is which, because you have now a guy that says he's the mother, and you have another guy that says he's the father. And so it's confusing not only to the kids, but also to the community. And so you get a picture of a very, I don't know what's the right word, a very confused description of the family. And so you have the Bible that says something, and you have the current definition of the family that's very diverse from the Bible. So how do we bridge the gap? How do we understand this? What can we learn from this that we can apply in our lives today? I think one of the things that I need to keep in mind is that the culture will always dictate what and how a family should live. And there will always be other ideas that will come probably 10 years from now, even 5 years from now, and will say that this should be what a family should look like. But as Christians, it seems to me that the message of this text, this 4 texts, that the message for us is that a family should be ruled not by the culture, but by Christ. And that family should reflect love towards each other, respect towards each other. There should be honor. There should be submission. And these are the 4 values that God looks at each Christian family. Of course, these things doesn't come easy, because our influence as parents is very limited these days. This was true 20 years ago without the gadgets. This was true because you only get to spend how many hours with your kids at the house? Just a couple of hours. They spend more time in the classrooms and classes. I mean, teachers are teaching something that's different from your house. But today, it's even more true, because even though you are in the house, in the same house, your kids have access to the outside world through, gadgets, cell phone. I'm not saying that those are evil, or no, you should cut them off, or that's not what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is that they have access to the outside world, and information today is just so thick that there's so much information that sometimes most of this information are not really helpful for our kids. Like, for example, I don't know if you have heard the Momo Challenge. I don't know how you pronounce it. Momo Challenge or Momo? I don't know. Momo Challenge is an image of a distorted figure. It's a female, has a big smile from ear to ear. It has the legs of a chicken, I think, or a turkey or something. But if you look at this image, it just gives you this impression, like, is this a joke or a ghost, or am I supposed to laugh or be scared? Well, the bad thing about this was that 2 years ago, this was an app that started through, if I'm not mistaken, what's the name of that app? It's a social app. It was not Facebook. Was it WhatsApp? Now, YouTube today, WhatsApp, started by WhatsApp, it was a social app, WhatsApp. It pops up on your screen and says and tells you to do something. Well, it now has moved to YouTube. And last week I heard the news that one of the things that people do, or kids do, is usually watch YouTube's kid, YouTube Kids. What, YouTube Kids. And so when they are watching this YouTube, these videos on YouTube, these kids are watching YouTube, these videos on YouTube, this image will pop up and say something, command something to your kids, and end up your kids will end up doing the things that this, you know, this Momo thing, this Momo person has asked of your child. And a child, an 11-year-old girl, committed suicide because of the pressure and also the task that was given by this generated image. I don't know who created it, but it seems to me that it's an evil, evil image. But this just gives you an idea of how and what and the amount of influence that the culture can get into your family today. And it's scary, because as we continue to progress, we'll only see ourselves developing more gadgets that are hard for families to refuse. My child right now is, my daughter is 2 years old, but she cries for my phone. My phone daddy, because she wants to watch YouTube on my phone. And sometimes YouTube videos there are not just kids. Even though I try to put in a Baby Shark video, on the 10th in line or list of videos, there will be an adult video there. And she loves to swipe up and down. And it's just a matter of time that she will click one of those adult videos. It's just a matter of time. And it's scary. So I think the point here from Ephesians and also Titus and 1 Peter and Colossians is that we should not be dictated. And we should try our best to protect our family, our Christian family, from the influences of the world, and let Christ dwell in our families. And how do we do that? I think the way to do this is, even though this may sound easy, is to bring our kids to the church every Sunday. I appreciate seeing grandfathers, grandparents who are trying their best to take their kids to church, even though the parents of their grandkids are not active at church. I appreciate how Jeannie continues to bring Briar to church every Sunday, even though Briar is a grandson, right? It's a nephew, yes. Bryson. Nephew, not Briar. Bryson is a nephew. Okay, forgive me. But isn't that great? And if you are a couple or somebody that doesn't have any child, and you feel like, this doesn't bother me, I don't have any kids, I don't have any responsibilities, I think your presence in the church, yes, even though that's true, probably, I think your presence in the church is a big impact to these kids. You can be a good source of influence to these kids. Remind the older guys that doesn't have any families that even though they're not a father, they're a father of the church. And that's true to all of us here. You might not be a father to anybody, but you're a father to the church. And your presence and your contribution, saying hi to these kids, is a big influence to them already. So moving forward, it's really important for us to bring our kids to church. And I think, you know already, that kids can be noisy. They can yell out in the middle of a sermon. And this happened to Mark probably a couple of times. But as adults, let's be considerate to these kids, because that's what we want to do. We don't want to shut them out and say, hey, you're too noisy. Don't come to church. Take your child outside. That's what we want to do. We want to be a community that wants to protect the family, the Christian family, from the outside world. And the only way to do that is to be an open kind of community that accepts children as well. Because they're not only the future of the church, they're the church right now. They're the church right now. So I hope that as we move forward towards this text, with this text in mind, that we will keep Christ as the center of our family, that there will be love. Because whatever the kids see in their family has some sort of effect on their lives. I don't want this to be too much about my story, but my dad almost left me and my family twice. And I always feared that one day I might do that to my family. Even though I don't plan to do that, but there's always that negative effect when you see something like that. So I hope that whatever your child sees in your family, it will be an imagery of love, an imagery of respect, an imagery of honor, so that they can be the kind of persons that God wants them to be. So that's the household codes, and I hope that you will keep in mind that Christ needs to be the center of our families. He needs to be the number one, the head of our families. There's anybody here that feels like, as we prepare our minds to the song, it feels like he's not part of any family and feels like he's alone, or she feels like she's alone. God has invited you to become part of his family. He has one big family, and that family is a loving and peaceful family. And God would love for you to become part of his family. So if you are that person, you are very welcome to stand up and come forward, and we can baptize you so that you can become a member of God's big family.